Welcome to Still Entitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Will,
how's your Tuesday treating you?
You're in a black void today. I was looking forward to seeing what fancy background.
Oh, you want a background? Okay, hold on. Let's see. We got
In this time, it's like the little things. The little kind of things that take me away from the day-to-day, like wondering what background you're going to bring into our Zoom call that I look forward to. And I'm being serious about that.
What was that background? Was that called Neil deGrasse Tyson's pajamas?
No, that...
it's a starscape. That's what it is.
His tie or his pajamas. Or maybe I'm sure he wears one of those really long sleeping caps.
This is one of the... Oh God, really? This is one of the 25th anniversary Hubble images. I don't remember which one, but I think it's a nebula of some kind. It's nebulous what the picture is actually of. I have
nebulous. Well done.
As you're
scrolling through background,
and the people listening to the audio who can't see it, I want to talk about. Last week, of course, if you listened to the podcast, we had a conversation here and on. This is only a test about what's going on in the world, and it was, as if you've listened to it, it was kind of a hard conversation for even us to talk through and verbalize. And I want to thank people for listening, because the feedback was really encouraging.
The feedback was like so encouraging. I was really really moved by our conversation felt accepted and processed, and that's what we were doing. We were accepting the situation for what it is and attempting to process it with each other, and of course we're all doing that with ourselves. But it is incumbent on us, as all of us as citizens going through this really difficult time in the world, to process this stuff and talk honestly about it. And I was very chuffed, to use a wonderful British word, I was chuffed to see the response to our conversation last week.
And the responses didn't always have to, they weren't all in agreement with us, which I thought was, you know, not only expected, but also really welcome, because even those of you out there who don't fully agree with us or agree with, you know, certain things, the responses were thoughtful. You know, there were people who wrote paragraphs and paragraphs sharing how they think about it and how they may have changed. And you could see that, you know, the range of opinions it's a wide spectrum, and we're hopefully all at least engaging in the dialogue.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised by the lack of sea lioning, which is always nice in those kinds of conversations. I also, you know, people were sharing heartfelt and challenging their preconceptions, which was all you can ask for, I think, in that kind of context, especially on YouTube. I also got a ton of good book suggestions, and then some resources for talking to kids about what's going on, which is one of the things I had asked for at the end of the show.
Yeah. I've been seeing those pop up more and more too.
Well, it's funny. We recorded the show on, I think, Monday last week, and I ended up talking to my daughter on Monday evening, because before the show was out, because you couldn't not talk about it based on what was going on, what kids were talking about at school and their conference calls and stuff like that. And I just explained what was going. Hey, you know, we live in a. I explained what was going on to the best that I could, and I didn't pull punches. I didn't simplify things, and she was like, "Oh, well, I knew things were bad for people, you know, but I didn't realize." And we had a good conversation about it. So,
you know, the other thing that happened after our podcast last week was, last Wednesday, San Francisco had a massive, massive and super peaceful protest that started here in the Mission and moved through the streets and ended at the Mission police station. And I spent about 2 hours in the middle of that protest. I don't know if you guys attended, but it was really moving and really amazing. And just as one note, I wanted to point out, like, everyone's been saying, what about COVID transmission? And I can only speak to the protest that I was in, but here in the Bay Area, there was not a sick, the only face not covered with a mask was a young African-American up on a horse in the middle of 18th and Dolores Street. But besides that, every human I could see was wearing a mask. And in the 2 hours I spent in this dense crowd, I brushed against maybe three people. That's how assiduously the crowd was maintaining a distance at the same time as being super unified. It was a beautiful experience to be a part of.
And just as COVID is a pandemic and a health crisis, you know, this very much brutality and the kind of institutional racism that we're talking about is a health crisis as well.
Well, and to be honest, it's it will go down in history, in protest history, as one of the like great self-owns of all self-owns, that to battle protesters peacefully protesting police brutality, the police broke out a whole bunch of brutality.
I mean, yeah, every single one of those videos of people getting shot or pelleted with pepper spray or car, you know, whatever reporters, crowd dispersal. Yep. Yeah. Reporters getting whacked with shields. All of that illustrates the exact point that people are there for.
I mean, and it's engendering, just like we were talking about with the podcast, a set of really, really important conversations where I think culturally the Overton window is shifting in a way that I am hopeful about.
Yeah.
It also brings to light the types of dialogue we see on social media. And we talked about last week how social media, as much as it's a tool to propagate the sharing of information and facilitate, you know, conversation to some extent, the kind of very, by nature, the short form format of it doesn't allow for a lot of context to be shared and allows for a lot of things to be taken in ways that they weren't meant to be taken, and which is a way that, you know, conflict gets fueled.
It's the ultimate hot take, right? And you couple that with the fact that everyone can sculpt their social media to be the bubble that they want, so it feeds them. I mean, and these machines have been weaponized, to use a specific word, but purposefully, have been weaponized to deliver us precisely what we want to see, what fulfills our worldview, no matter what it may be.
And the platforms that give everyone a platform, a voice to post on an account, also makes everything feel more personal too. You know, where if we take a stand against racism, you know, people feel like, even if they don't want to take a stand, they're being called a racist, and it makes the ability to take criticism, it brings that to light, like the inability for people to take criticism and take things very personally, which happens in, you know, it amplifies basically, you know, all the kind of conflict avoidance and the ways that conflict rise up in day-to-day interactions and in workplace, right? All of that just gets multiplied.
Well, I mean, and also find me the person who can take criticism easily under all circumstances. It's something that we all have to kind of come to terms with over the course of our lives.
And it takes especially intense.
You know, there's hey, you could have done a better job on this report at work, and then there's hey, maybe you're a racist this whole time when you thought you were doing good things, and those are two wildly different types of criticism, and it's really, really hard to take serious criticism and listen when somebody challenges deeply held beliefs.
Yeah.
So props to people who have, I guess, or are working through it, as we all are.
It's also a lot, right? Like we had a conference call, a weekly meeting amongst our team, Adam, and you know,
yes. And we have this every week. We have the whole tested team gets together on Zoom to chat, often to chat about the week and to catch up on our lives and talk about the business of the week and what's going on and et cetera. This week, man, was so hilarious because it was like the Brady Bunch with the depression filter.
Oh no.
A lot of like, everyone, 1,000 yard everyone stares.
Was
sitting,
it was all like this. Everyone was like, and I was like, you all look like I feel. And everyone was like, yeah, pretty much.
Wow,
and that's because there's so much, and we're all internalizing it, and as active as we can be, and it's very draining, right? Which is why we know that a lot of people tune in and watch what we make as a way to kind of balance what's going on in the world and in their own lives. And
right. I mean, I very much appreciate that. People feel like the videos that we're putting out are a safe space to kind of downregulate, and that feels important, right? That's I use this videos that I watch for the same exact reason, kind of get my head straight, and you know, every day carries with it so every day carries with it so many weird, hidden, strange feelings. And it was fascinating to see the whole Tested team kind of feel downtrodden, because it, we're 3 months into this. We're it's about the 12th week. Am I right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, despite the fact that I'm lucky enough to have this shop, the monotony of not doing anything but coming here 5 days a week, spending the weekends driving around the Bay Area with the dog, the monotony is getting to me, and it's getting to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I hit 100 days. I'm at 95 days right now.
Wow.
And it's it's funny, because the things I really look forward to time talking to you guys and talking to Brad on the other podcasts that I do regularly, and the moments, it's funny. My grandmother used to tell stories about the Blitz when I was a kid, because she was 17 when the Germans started bombing London on the reg. And I completely misunderstood those stories looking at them now, because she would tell a story about one of her neighbors on her block, you know, everybody in the block working together to scrounge enough eggs and enough flour and sugar to make a wedding cake for somebody who was getting married during rationing. And I would, and then they'd all come to the wedding, and they'd all have a literal bite-sized piece of cake, so that everybody could have, as many people as possible could have a little bit of the cake. And, you know, when you're 10 and you're hearing this story, you're thinking, oh shit, that's terrible. Nobody got the cake. And like, this cake was this huge sacrifice. But now, you know, you think about the things that break up the monotony of the regular and make things, and not to, just to be clear, the thing we're going through, it's awful. It's tragic. A ton of people have died. I don't think it's the same as being bombed every night by you know, the fascists.
By an enemy.
And I don't think it's anything close to equivalent, but I can understand that the value.
Yeah.
I thought these were stories of how horrible it was during the Blitz.
You thought they were stories of privation, and what they are is stories of banding together.
They're wonderful stories about humanity finding ways to make the best of an awful situation. So yeah, like Gina and my daughter decorated the hallway in our house. They do this thing at school every year called Oceans Week, where they study a different part of the ocean, and they usually decorate the entire school. And they were like, let's just decorate the hallway. So I'll post some pictures on Twitter later, but they made jellyfish out of like paper lanterns and papered the whole wall, and there's coral reefs and there's tide pools and the whole thing. And it's like, every time I walk down the hallway, it makes me smile. So do something ridiculous in your house is what I'm saying.
If you can. On that front, we hung a bunch of pictures in our basement, in our garage recently, because we freed up a wall. And one of the things that we did not move from that is the seal that my son, Thing One, painted and stapled together as a kind of paper pillow for exactly that project at Mira Loma at this point, like 12 years ago.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope that years down the line, when we look at this time, it's going to be, we're going to see changes that actually happen, of course, but we're also going to see the quarantine and lockdown period, which we don't know how long, you know, we could be at the very beginning of this. It could be another year and a half, 2 years until a vaccine, but a time that that fosters, you know, creativity and introspection, right? And people being home and having more time to themselves is, one, going to make people more thoughtful. And two, maybe we're going to see a lot of really cool creative output from it, from you know, literature to you know, different types of storytelling. You know, we've gone through the people improving their home video production phase. Like, that was like the first month. We've gone through the bread making phase. I'm in the redo the house phase. We're like,
oh, okay.
We're looking at the same walls, the same setup. And literally this past weekend, we spent 2 days literally cleaning, like reversing the living room, just putting everything on the opposite side.
Nothing is better. I listen, we did this over the past couple of years. We've done a major reorg of our house. And frankly, what it's led to us, you know, there are always parts of your house that you use, and then there's parts of your house that get relegated for storage, or maybe that project that you never finish one weekend. And the long and the short of the reorg that we did just meant that we're using every part of our house. We're using every corner of it, and it's really efficient, and we got a bunch of stuff out for donation, and that just felt really cathartic. We did that early in the lockdown.
It's taking stock, right? It's taking stock of all the things you've accumulated, and you know, just as it's being introspective in a way that you relate to the place you live, if you're lucky to, you know, to have a home and to be able to have that space. Yeah,
indeed.
It's funny. The paper towels have become kind of a metaphor for the way we've changed in our house. Cause you know, we used to use paper towels completely thoughtlessly and you need something to wipe up three dots of water on the counter. You grab a paper towel, you swipe it, and it goes in the compost. I'm like, wow, what an asshole. Katie Coleman at OrdCamp a few years ago did a talk, and she was telling us how, like, she and Chell Lundgren were talking about how they bathe and how they use consumable stuff on the space station. And Katie said she would get a paper towel when she was on orbit, and she would use it. She'd use one little tiny corner one day, and then she'd fold it up and put it someplace in a Ziploc and use it the next day to wipe her mouth when she was eating lunch or whatever. And then, you know, and she would use every single piece of the paper. Right. That's amazing. And during the first like two months of this, when paper goods were in kind of tight supply, I think we used two rolls of paper towels, and most of them were for things that like you really don't want to use. Like we got out a bunch of rags and, you know, got some dish rags out and started using that stuff for more things than we ever would before. Really no change. No, I mean, it meant that when we washed the towels every other day, there was a few more things in the washing machine using cloth towels, cloth napkins, stuff like that. Does it have an impact on anything? No, but it means I probably buy less paper towels.
Both my wife and I grew up in households in the 70s where paper towels were the napkins, not the spill.
Oh,
like, and so we joke now that paper towels are our fancy napkins.
Well, No, you got those Selectasize ones out, and you're like, they're perfect. They're exactly the right size for your face.
Yeah, exactly. Great. Exactly.
Rag life. That's what a good rag is a precious thing.
I mean, it's like, I feel in a weird mood, right? Because last week we were addressing the very intense stuff that was going on, and this week
still
going on.
Yeah, still going every night.
And with the veto-proof majority of the City Council of Minneapolis voting to overhaul the police department, it feels like a glimmer of real hope. It feels like the possibility of genuine change. And the number of people carefully explaining what defund the police means on Twitter, that it does not mean we are not going to have any policemen. There are certainly some libertarians arguing for that, but I don't think anybody is seriously entertaining that as a real world solution to our problems. And that's not what defund the police means. It makes me, again, the discussion feels substantively slightly different, and that feels hopeful.
It's on one hand, I agree. On the other hand, I watched for 4 years half of the people on my feed saying that when Colin Kaepernick took a knee and athletes took knees, they were being rude to the police or the flag or whatever nonsense Republicans think. Yeah. And, you know, on the other hand, it could not have been made more clear by everyone involved.
I know
that it was about, you know, extrajudicial killings and police violence. So, you know.
Yep. Totally, totally true. By the way, have you guys seen John Oliver's show this week?
Oh,
it's
no.
Very good.
I've never seen him this angry. Mm. Not even close. And it's rhetorically beautiful. And also Seth Meyers and his team, who just got back. They all, Colbert and Seth Meyers took a week-long break last week. They're back this week. And all of them are on fire. They have dispensed with the idea of comedy. It's not that they're not funny. It's that they are speaking truth to power. We've been watching tons of Colbert and Seth this week, and it's just been amazing.
Mm. Will, you mentioned Chell and astronauts. And one thing we didn't talk about last week was the SpaceX launch.
Yes.
Yeah.
Crew Dragon. I mean, they're
historical.
Yes. And there was a whole delay. I mean, 2 weeks ago, you were getting ready, Adam, to do a live stream with Discovery watching the launch. Of course, it was well known now because through the weather, it was pushed to Saturday. And then it went off without a hitch.
Saturday
and
launch worked. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Launched and landed.
Totally historic. A private company got, in cooperation with NASA, got two human beings into space. It's completely amazing.
It's funny. Obviously the last time that happened was in 1981. I remember sitting around at age six watching that. My daughter's about the same age. We sat down and watched it. She was really, really bored with the whole thing right up until the moment the rocket launched. And then it was the most cool thing in the world. And I was like, oh, just wait. You're about to see some really cool business. The video is much better now than it was when I was a kid.
I've never seen, I've never seen daytime a rocket launch. I think the one I went for InSight a couple of years ago was through haze. And so we could hear it, but not see it. But I hear that the brightness of it is something that you cannot really communicate even with video, just how bright that rocket is.
Even like the little ones that I've seen from far away. Cause you know, when you're in Florida and at Disney and they launch something from Canaveral, you can see it a minute after launch or whatever. Like you still see them. And it was a tiny, tiny point of dark and a lot of light is what I remember.
Yeah.
And It was inspiring as a lesson in what human beings can do when they work collaboratively. I believe in that message. I believe in exploration, and I believe in that mission. And it was really exciting to see it work. It's just super gratifying.
Yeah. You guys watching anything? Spend any time?
We just spent the last couple of days burning through two of my favorite David Mamet films.
Ooh.
Heist with Gene Hackman, Sam Rockwell, Rebecca Pidgeon, Ricky Jay, Delroy Lindo, and Danny DeVito as the villain.
Wow.
Heist is one of the great, it is a quadruple cross movie, man. You got to pay close attention. It's a delightful and amazing film. And then the next night we watched Spartan with Val Kilmer, Derek Luke, and Kristen Bell, and just both stunning, intense, wonderful action movies.
I remember absolutely loving Spartan when I saw it. I don't think I don't remember a whole lot about it right now.
Spartan is really worth your time. I have watched it probably half a dozen times since it came out in 2004.
Spartan and and Ronin are a good combo too, right?
I can't give any.
You don't like Ronin? that's the Mamet film that you don't like.
Ronin commits this cardinal sin, which is I have a friend who can't abide movies that have the title of the movie in the movie.
Oh.
Right? Where you someone mean like says the title of
the
movie.
They were within the usual suspects.
Yes. Right. And the most egregious example of this is Jagged Edge, in which someone says Jagged Edge like six times in the course of the movie. Jagged Edge.
There must be a supercut, right? Where
but Ronin not only has an opening credit that says Ronin, in feudal Japan, the Ronin was a masterless samurai.
Oh boy.
And then twice in the movie, you have someone say that exact phrase to someone else. Well, in feudal Japan, a Ronin was a masterless samurai. Twice! I'm sorry. I know I'm like getting at a fever's pitch, but Ronin drives me crazy for that.
There's definitely already supercuts on YouTube where the movie in the span of like 2 minutes, you know, 80 movie, 100 movies, it's just a quote, right?
Starting Joey did one of these. Night. He did one of these for Screen years ago. Yeah.
Oh God.
I feel like this was a Screen segment, maybe, but I don't know.
When it happens in a movie, I always turn to Danica and I say, that's the name of the movie. That's the name of the movie.
So I watched Death Race 2000 this weekend because it's leaving Criterion at the end of the month. I had never seen it before. It was the schlockiest thing I've seen in a really long time. but you know, not good, but kind of interesting. It was it's challenging.
The original, not the remake.
Yeah, oh, the original. Yeah, the one. Just to be clear, it's David Carradine.
Is it James Caan or is it a Carradine?
It's David Carradine.
That's it.
and but Sylvester Stallone plays the baby face. So David Carradine plays the anti-hero, and Sylvester Stallone plays the baby face good guy inside the world. Who's
really?
So the setup is people have to. There's a race every year, and the people make the race. They have to. They get points by killing pedestrians and people walking along the way.
Right.
There's a bunch of icky, horrible stuff that goes with that. So Carradine plays like the heavy who's been maimed and injured, but has managed to win three times or something. Sly Stallone plays the always second place babyface good guy to David Carradine's bad guy. And it is exploitative and schlocky and horrifying, but I'm glad I watched it. So
it's Corman.
It's Corman, yeah. It is. Yeah. I think it's maybe the most Corman, but I don't know for sure.
Speaking of Carradine, of course, famously took the role in Kung Fu that Bruce Lee created as a series, and ESPN put out a 2-hour Bruce Lee documentary called Be Water over the weekend, which is really worth watching. A lot of incredible footage of him being very young. It's one of those, like, Bruce Lee, you forget how short of a career he actually had in America, because he did so many films in Hong Kong, and you know, he passed away before Enter the Dragon actually came out. So that was part of the, you know, the legend. But there's so much, and so we've seen all the footage. You see the screen test, the famous Green Hornet screen test, all the interviews he had done. But they found some really old archival footage of his first few movies in Hong Kong. So that's definitely well recommended. Criterion, speaking of that, they just put out a pack of Jackie Chan movies, going from like his old, like late 70s stuff, the Hyena movies, to I think it ends with Police Story and Police Story 2.
Criterion has also been releasing films by African American directors for free.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
As part of the, as contributing to the national discussion, and you know, everybody doing their part. Those little gestures mean a lot.
Yeah. And then the other recommendation I want to give is I'm finding that Amazon Prime has just a wealth of documentaries that are like these kind of. Some are high quality, some are the more Kickstarter-like documentaries. But
you set one last night.
Yes, this one's called Making Waves. It is super high quality. It's directed by a woman who's the professor of sound at USC, I want to say. But it basically is the history of sound and film, starting with the jazz singer, the first time you heard the first talkie, all the way to the creation of Dolby with, you know, Apocalypse Now. And really profiles Walter Murch and Ben Burtt, you know, front of
how your, exciting, how awesome,
Gary Rydstrom of Jurassic Park and Pixar fame, their careers, and basically they all came from that same school of like Walter Murch with George Lucas and Ford Coppola, and then Ben Burtt was hired for Star Wars because Walter Murch wasn't available, and Gary Rydstrom was hired for Pixar because Ben Burtt wasn't available.
Wow.
Now they're all Emmy winners and amazing sound designers and sound editors.
Yeah.
But the whole spectrum of, you know, Foley to special effects, audio to dialogue to ADR, all that stuff.
I've been watching a ton of videos online of this old Tony, who's a YouTube maker, very entertaining, very unassuming, with lots of really great shop advice and actual execution of said shop advice. It's been all the machine tools for me. I can't stop watching videos of machine tool operation.
And I know that, speaking of YouTubers who do shop work, we are doing, we'll tease a collaboration that's coming up in the coming months with Andrew Klein, who reached out to you after a live stream, after a Q&A, working with you on a workbench.
Yeah, someone was asking me about my bench, and I talked about the bench, and then I talked about making one and talked about various options that I understood I needed something. And Andrew reached out and said, I make these benches. I was actually familiar with his vices, which are used have a plexi front with visible gears and two speeds for operating the vice so that you can operate it fast for opening it quickly and slow. And there's some really cool linkages in there. And Andrew is in the middle of making me a workbench. And the wood for this workbench is monolithic, actually. It looks like it's going to be two giant slabs of monolithic wood boards.
The whole thing he's documenting will include some links because he's doing, like, he does a lot of digital work and he has plans and stuff. And so we're watching it come together through YouTube, and eventually it'll get to the cave. This, you're thinking, Adam, is going to be take the place of that primary workbench that you have your lights attached to.
It is, right? Yes. It will live there. It will not roll because I have learned the limits of making things roll.
I don't think people understand that current bench is like cobbled to, it's beautiful. So beautiful, but like the amount of kind of things that have been bootstrapped to it from casters to clamps and lights.
It's drawers, the big huge clamp, all that stuff.
Funnily enough, it also turns out that my grandfather, who was a maker, my grandfather was a surgeon who had a home shop and did a lot of his own repair. And actually, my grandfather had a remote control for the volume on his television in the 70s that he built. And okay. I am going to purchase a television and replicate this as a one-day build so you guys can see the cleverness of my wonderful strange.
Did he design it too, or was it like a Popular Mechanics kit or something like that?
It was not electronic. It was entirely mechanical.
Okay.
And it was his invention entirely. It's going to make you laugh your ass off when you see it. Anyway, my grandfather's workbench top with two vices attached to it still exists. And it is now in a storage space in New York where at some point I will get it out here. I like the fact that I will still have my grandfather's workbench, but Andrew Klein's will be the central one in the space.
Awesome.
But it means also that I think I'm going to have to get rid of one of these benches. I don't know whether to live it tested or we will.
I think we'll take it. Yeah. We'll find a way to move it over. We'll figure it out. Yeah. Whenever we get a chance to get back in there. But yeah, that's a lot. I mean, there's so much going on. It's good to see you guys.
Always a pleasure.
The world is waking up a little bit by bit. I mean, we're not ready to start having tested everyone back in the space, but we're starting to talk about what the best practices the film industry is using. It's fascinating. You know, I have a shoot coming up in the next few months, and as it's approaching, obviously it's a moving target of safety, and we're adjusting to that. But slowly, which is the right pace, you know, things are starting to move.
Yeah. And like I said, the thing I hope that we come out of this, whenever we come out of this, is that people will have used that time wisely to be active, either in activism or to be more introspective, or, you know, really flex that creativity and
learn a skill, make something, you know, whatever, do something. Fight entropy.
It's lovely to see you guys again this week.
See you all next week. Norm, what's on the site this week?
Got a one-day build that's going up probably tomorrow. That's actually something we filmed back in February.
Oh, wow. Which one is this?
It's with another YouTuber. Has to do with numbers.
Oh, nice. Yes.
I think you guys will really enjoy that. And this
is one of the last ones we did before.
It is. We have like three that we have not published yet from that. And I think timing wise, we just want to get this one because you're making so much stuff. And then I will also say,
I just uploaded three new one day builds from last week.
Insane. The thing, the vise that you showed us on this podcast must have been a month ago now. Whole process, that's going to be shown.
So, and that's actually, Joey just sent me the rough of that to do some narration for.
Yes.
Oh, I can't wait to see that one.
Oh, it's going to be awesome.
It's a good project.
All right. Stay safe, guys. Be kind to each other out there in the world. We'll see you later.
Bye guys.